So I guess I would say the same thing about storytelling. It's a form that can take shape. It's not a formula. And the minute we start to plug into it like it's a formula, it'll lose its humanity and meaning.
You're listening to The Narrative, a podcast dedicated to helping professionals in every industry build better business stories. Whether you're looking to engage your audience, be more persuasive, or close more business deals, these proven strategies will help you effectively turn your data and messaging into compelling narratives that resonate. Let's get into the show.
Hello, and welcome to The Narrative, the podcast that talks all about storytelling and business. Today, I am super, super genuinely over the top, giddy with excitement to be welcoming a guest that I've been trying to get on since we started this podcast. She doesn't know this, but she first came into my life about, it must be 4.5 years ago. And when I first started working at Prezi and working with the team that we have that puts together presentations, there was a product manager at Prezi who brought over this book called Slideology and put it down in front of me and said, you need to read this, you need to read all of it, and you need to get everyone on your team to read it. And while that was a very forthright thing to say to someone the first time you've ever met them, it was nonetheless very good advice. So you probably guessed by now that the person that we have as our guest today is Nancy Duarte, who was the writer of that book. Nancy, hi.
Hi.
delighted to have you on. But while my first meeting with you was via Slideology, you've written more than one book since then, right?
Yeah, I've written 5 total. So yeah, it's a lot of work. I'm in the middle of another one too, so I guess I'm kind of hooked.
Thank you for taking time out of that to speak to us.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Nancy is the principal at Duarte, which is certainly the biggest design agency here in Silicon Valley and a really big leader in the space of visualization, visual storytelling, and really can't be anyone better to talk to when it comes to storytelling in business. Nancy, I want to start by just talking about something that comes up a lot when I go out to meet people or even when we sit down and have meetings. Why are we so concerned enough to have a podcast about storytelling in business?
Yeah, that's a really good question. What's happening, I think part of it is stories persuade. Like, the nature of stories convinces you to either be like someone or not be like someone. Like, we listen or watch a movie and we're constantly comparing ourselves to the hero or the protagonist and saying, oh, I wouldn't make that decision, or I would behave differently. When you use stories in business, it actually will influence employees, stakeholders, partners, customers to kind of either say, I'm rooting for them, or I want to bond with them because they have a strong emotional appeal. And I think partly also what's happening in our culture as a whole is that people are missing a lot of meaning. People could say the Silicon Valley is, I hear a lot of people say it's one of the loneliest places on the planet, which is so bizarre because there's so many people here. And I think what story does is it brings meaning. It brings meaning to a business. You tell a story and you could rally people to bring meaning to a project. And it just is, it's a way to galvanize people to wake up and want to come and work on what you're working on.
And you've got a lot of experience of not just doing this yourself within your own organization, but also helping other really notable people do it, right?
Yeah, we have a really good time. So there's a couple ways to explain story. One is to tell like a pure story, a personal story from a place of conviction. But you can also lace storytelling attributes into a presentation. And that's what I think we're definitely most known for, is presenting through using storytelling techniques, which is just a blast. It's just a blast.
The techniques part is, I think, the reason I'm most excited about having you on, because of all of the people we've had on the podcast, you're the one who's really, really gone into depth and detail about the different kinds of techniques and particularly structures, right?
Yeah.
And I remember reading Illuminate, and for anyone who hasn't, Illuminate has this glorious section in the middle of it where you can unfold this glossy piece, and you've got this table of which story to use when. How long did that take to put together?
Oh, is that for Illuminate? Yeah. That took so long. That book, Illuminate, was my hardest one to write. Traditionally, all of my books had been about presentations and presenting. And this one is about how to use speeches, stories, ceremonies, and symbols to lead and drive change. So I think people were like, what? She's writing a leadership book, you know? And so, yeah, there's this centerfold. That's a funny thing to call it. There's a tear out, fold out thing that you can tear out. And so what it is when you're driving change and leading an organization, you're actually driving a story form. It's a five act structure where you say a dream, and then you're asking your people to take a leap with you. And then once they leap in, the story gets kind of scary. I mean, Frodo and Sam on the way to Sauron was kind of scary, right? Then they have to kind of fight and climb. And that's that messy middle of the story. And then ultimately you arrive. Well, that's the same story structure that leaders go through when they're driving change. And so what we did is we knew it was true because we've worked with so many big companies, and we had driven a lot of the communication strategies around this structure. So what we did is once we figured out the five-act structure, we found that there's a motivating and a warning story. There's a motivating and a warning speech and a motivating and a warning ceremony that you could use as your toolkit as you go through this journey. So, yeah, this book was a blast. I had a co-author she and I became very close friends, and she's my chief strategist. And it was four years it took to write that book. But I loved it. It was awesome.
I love that you've brought up Frodo and Sam, because one of the things that we kind of find as a recurring theme is a hero's journey. And that is really literally a hero's
classic
journey.
Classic, yeah. That's an epic tale.
And one of the questions we get a lot is, what are the alternatives to hero's journey? Like, I think especially in the climate we live in now, there's a great desire to move away from the tried and trusted, or to be original. Is it something, I don't know, is it something that we shouldn't try and move away from, just adapt to what we need, or are there really great alternatives to it?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if all the listeners are familiar, but the hero's journey was kind of researched and assembled by Joseph Campbell, and he studied Eastern and Western epic length tales, like mythical structured tales, and Eastern and Western massive, the real epic story structure shared the same similar structure. It was an 18-part story structure that the myths and religions and stories that had passed down thousands and thousands of generations, they all shared the same shape, the same structural shape. And so I think that because it resonates at this soul level, even you could almost say a spiritual level, because it passed down, every major religion follows the structure. I do think the structure is important. I think it has an inherent longing in it that humans long for. Now, in my research, I really loved a derivative body of work by a guy named Chris Vogler, and he wrote a book called The Writer's Journey. And I really love that book because he took Joseph Campbell's 18-part story structure and boiled it down to 12. He was a analyst for Disney, and he would analyze all the Disney movies to the structure. So it's a little more simplified. And my online version of Resonate, I actually interviewed Chris Vogler, and I really loved that book. And it meant a lot to me. And so if, you know, you could take the 18-part or the 12-part story structure, it still boils all down into Aristotle's classic three-act structure. You know, in reality, they all are, you know, subcategories of the major three-act structure. So I think it's classic. I think it's timeless. I think it works every time. I don't want to say storytelling's a formula, but it's kind of a formula. So I don't know exactly if that even answered your question, but I think that the structures are classic, and I think people are just riffing on the classic formulas.
Yeah, it absolutely does answer my question, because I think in business, so much of what people do in business, whether it's working with data, leadership, developing a product, we do inherently look for structures, right, to guide us. So
yeah, yeah.
The fact that there's one that's tried and trusted, like, and we're talking, you know, going back millennia, I think that's going to be very satisfying for people to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Pixar, and Pixar is someone that we've worked with, and they are, I guess, using similar structures, but they always feel so fresh in their stories. Mm-hmm. If I'm, you know, if the listeners were to pick up something about practical advice they could do to not seem like, oh, this is just the same formula, right? To make people not realize that you're actually using that same structure. Have you got any tips and tricks on that?
That's a really good question, because there's more to a story than just the structure, right? You can go full analytical and just plug in all the right formulaic pieces, and it still will not a great story make, you know? So a lot of it has to do with how well you develop the character, how much you like the person. So one of the classic things that happens in storytelling is in the first few minutes or so, you need the audience to want to root for the main protagonist. So even something like freakish, like Pulp Fiction, like he was terrible, but he did one small thing to make you at least be like, oh, there's something redemptive about him. In the movie Up, speaking of Pixar, oh my God, that opening sequence of them, the old loving couple, you were just crying. I mean, I was like, oh my God, I'm less than 4 minutes into this movie and I was bawling like a baby, already rooting for the protagonist. So there's just a real magic into how you weave the structure, but then how you weave the characters. And that character has to have an object of desire. So however well you craft the desire that protagonist is longing for. So they have this longing, and that longing for this object of desire is what gets them through that messy middle. All those variables are what make different stories different. You know, there's just a lot of variables that you get to play with. And I say the same thing about, you know, I used storytelling to inform my presentation making, and people kept saying, oh, you made a formula. And I kept saying, no, it's not a formula, it's a form. So in music making, in classical music, there's the sonata form. Now, a sonata from Beethoven is very different than a sonata from Mozart, say, not even sounding the same, but they have the same underlying inherent structure. So I liked that the sonata was called a sonata form. So that's why I chose to call it my persuasive story form instead of calling it a formula. And so I guess I would say the same thing about storytelling. It's a form that can take shape. It's not a formula. And the minute we start to plug into it like it's a formula, it'll lose its humanity and meaning. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and it'll become formulaic, which is
right,
what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
I love the point about trying to do something redemptive early on. Let's take this into a business setting. I think that's something that traditionally, at least, perhaps not in Silicon Valley, but traditionally at least, leaders of organizations at whatever level, how do you make yourself someone that your team is going to root for?
Oh, wow. How do you make yourself? You mean the leader or the brand?
If I was listening to this podcast and like, oh yeah, Nancy's saying these great things about how, you know, you have to root for the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in many business situations, you're not always the protagonist yourself.
Right. That's what I was just going to say. Like, that's what's interesting. As a leader, you're actually the mentor in storytelling. The leader's the mentor, not the hero. In business, your customers are the hero. They're the protagonist, and you are the mentor. So in myths and movies, the mentor does three things. They come alongside the protagonist, the customer. So my purpose of my business and my leadership is to come alongside my customer as the mentor and help them get unstuck. I should bring a magical gift or a special tool. And that's the three things. Bring a magical gift, have a special tool, or help them get unstuck. And so I think a mindset, when we set ourselves up as the protagonist and the hero, it's actually the beginning of the sign of a fall, like of failing, because your mind, you're the central figure in the story instead of your customers being the central figure of the story. And so that's why usually my mindset when I speak to my employees or to customers is one to serve, to help them versus, hey, everyone, come and help me get unstuck. I'm on this journey. I hope that makes sense how I said it.
Makes total sense. My next question is, do other people make the same mistake I made in framing that question in that I put myself as the protagonist?
No, I thought that was good. You know what? This doesn't come up as much as I think it should in the podcast and stuff I do, because people are in that. They don't see that they're even doing that. So they don't know to ask the question. And so, no, I loved it. It doesn't come up that often, but it's a framing device. I use it about life. Like, you know, sometimes we feel like we're to be the hero of our children and we're not, we're their mentor, you know. You know, Yoda had been a Jedi for 800 years. Like 800 and some years, that's what made him qualified to speak into Luke's life, is he knew what he was doing. And so as the mentor, I'm not saying that we're dumb or lazy and that we don't get all the action. I'm saying we should be so experienced and have so much wisdom and knowledge that we can come alongside someone else and give them insights from our life. And so I loved it. Don't be embarrassed. It was awesome.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think if we change the formula or form of this podcast that I didn't look stupid, and I don't think we'd have something to put out at all at any point. So Nancy, we've talked a lot about the broad strokes of storytelling and the hero's journey and structure. And you've already mentioned, which I loved, about putting the customer at the forefront. Returning back to that tear out, not centerfold of your book, you have all of those different story types. And I really love the detail. And we don't have time to go through every single one of them. But if you were to pick out one kind of story type as your favorite to give, which would it be?
Yeah, so it's cool because obviously there's two different types of speeches. One's kind of a motivating speech and one would be a warning speech. And so there's 10 types of speeches because there's the dream phase, the leap, the fight, the climb, arrive. So there's 5 stages, of which each stage you can give a motivating speech or a warning speech. Well, nobody wants to do the warning speeches, so those are never my favorite. I've had to deliver each of these for different kinds of situations. My favorite is always the vision speech because I'm casting a new dream. So that's like getting to stand up and be Dr. King, but inside your own organization, right? Oh, I have this dream of this great alternate future that's different than today. That's my favorite. I would almost say Resonate was almost all about a vision for a brighter future. So that's my favorite type of speech. You know, any of the warning ones are hard. I just on this, what was it, this Tuesday, I did a surrender speech, which is part of the arrive phase internally. And a surrender speech is when you kind of have to throw in the towel and admit that you failed and talk about what you're going to do to fix things. And we had a really interesting internal situation that needed to be dealt with much more quickly than I dealt with it in. And it bore some fruit and it became a very serious problem. So I had to say, hey, I threw in the towel. I took action. It's my fault. I own it. I will never make this mistake again. And so it was hard, but I had to stand up and admit, hey, where we are, I surrender, I'm sorry. I don't have to do those very often. But what was bizarre is even though I made a big failure, I got more love notes and thank yous. And people posted on LinkedIn about how great I am to work for. And I stood up and admitted that I massively failed. So it actually has a more appealing impact than you would ever imagine.
Oh, I'm just trying to think if I can admit to my failures. It might take too long. Returning to your...
Sorry. I snort laughed. Sorry.
It's totally okay. It really would take a lot of time. Returning to your favorite one to give, which is, the one where you bring people in, the vision speech. To my mind, like if I'm speaking to someone externally, like trying to convince them to buy my product or use my service or something like that. Is that also in a way a vision speech these days? Are you really trying to sell people more than just vision, right?
Yeah, you're trying to persuade them that, hey, you would have an alternate future that would be happier than your current realities if you bought this product, right? So they're like little micro vision speeches, you could say.
What are some really great elements of a fantastic vision speech that are going to get people, up out of their chairs and reaching for their credit cards?
Yeah. So that's kind of gets into Resonate, which I loved writing that book. And that book is about persuading. So the structure there that pulls from storytelling is the reason we love storytelling is it has a cathartic release. It has this rise of tension and then a release of that tension. And to build that into a great speech, you would use contrast. So what you would do is you would contrast the current realities with the hope of a better future. So you structurally would move back and forth between what currently is and what could be. And then you return back, hey, look at today's realities. They're not so great. Just think about what could be, and you use that as a structural device. People can see contrast. Our brains are wired for contrast. That's how we know whether to fight or flight we're constantly, our brains are just like, am I safe or am I not? Is this good? Is it bad? Like we're constantly measuring things. So if you make that contrast between the current realities and the great hope of a future really clear, people will be able to see what you're trying to get them to do. And it's a very powerful tool.
You know, I think that's great. The ability to compare things, I think, is a really needed skill, and to be able to do that repeatedly without the audience always knowing that you're doing that, I think is a really great tip. While we're on the subject of tips, let's flip it around. As someone who's worked with so many people in so many industries and for over such a substantial career, what are the things that you see people doing wrong?
How long is the podcast? No, I'm just kidding.
Let's just do the ones that you see kind of again and again, or the biggest crimes, as it were.
Yeah, in presenting specifically.
Presenting, storytelling.
Yeah, I think that in the story category, I would say that people don't really go there. They don't really tell what I would call a transformative story, because to tell a story that's really going to impact lives, a really good story has three acts. The first act is that the person set up as likable, but the second act is they go through these terrible hardships. That's the messy middle, and then they're changed by it. People don't talk about the messy middle. They don't talk about life being hard. They don't talk about I failed and enough. And I would say on the storytelling side, I'd love people to get really real about the stories they tell and how messy life really is. And that'll create an incredible leader to do that. I think on the presenting side with content, it's lack of empathy, I think. I think we approach it. We talked about this a little earlier. We approach our presentations from the perspective that it's when we're in the room and you're the presenter, it's easy to think you're the hero or the central figure because you're talking the most. And that's how it is in a story. The protagonist is usually one that talks the most. And I just wish that more presenters would think about who's sitting in the seats listening. And I think that would change how they make their content. On the visual side, I wish people understood that the visuals are the backdrop for your spoken words. I think sometimes they're either terribly done or overdone. And then the slides are the central figure instead of it being really the presenter, what the presenter is trying to say to the audience. So even your slides need to be audience-centric. They need to be really, is this the best way for the audience to process information? Is this the best visual to help them consume the information? Am I thinking about them, or is this just my pet dense graphic, you know? And so you it's just really audience centricity and lack thereof, I would say, would have been the short answer to that.
I have one that crops up for me. I'm just plain curious to see if it comes for you as well. This is the selfish part of the podcast where I ask Nancy Duarte questions. So I find that people don't put their most interesting thing at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. You mean in the presentation?
Yeah. Or in the story, they start with the mundane. So it was in a restaurant and I, and it's like, no, start with the impactful thing. Or is that something that when people get to you, they've already worked that out?
No, I think you're right. Like, it's so funny. I would say, I don't know, before some of my books came out, almost every single slide deck started with an About Us page. So you have the title slide, then the first click is About Us. And the presenter immediately says, we have 15 locations around the world. We have 4,000 customers. We have this. I have that. I, me. Right. And I think you're right. Like, immediately, it's not about the person sitting in the room. Suddenly, you're shining a light on yourself. And so I think great presentations can have a hook at the front. But I also think sometimes that gets very cheesy. It has to be done well, and it has to be done really empathetically.
I'm so glad you said that, because it really connects with my pet peeve, which is when you go to conferences and the speaker gets up on stage and they've just been introduced. So you've just heard their name. And more often than not, their name is also written on screen. And you've got an agenda in front of you with their name. And then the first thing they say is, my name is. And you're like... And then they do the same thing. If they're not talking about their company, the people will go off on a long attempt, I guess, need for validation. Like, I'm John and I worked here and I've done this and I've also done that. And also I did this. And this is why you should listen to me. And it's just such a turnoff, no?
Yep.
Okay. We should perhaps move away from Nancy and David, talk about things that they don't like at conferences they've been to. thank you so much for joining us today, Nancy. It was really a thrill. I hope that the people who are listening to it really enjoyed it as well. If people are interested in resonating and illuminating and slideology and all of those things, where can they go to find more information?
Thank you for asking that. My website is duarte.com. LinkedIn, I connect to everyone who connects to me on LinkedIn. I have Twitter handle Nancy Duarte, and Facebook. My company is on Facebook, so there's tons of little ways to connect.
Thank you, Nancy. It sounds like it's incredibly easy to connect to you, which is a great way for people to learn. For those who want to learn more about Prezi, you should visit prezi.com. That's P-R-E-Z-I.com. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with another episode of The Narrative soon.
In the age of smartphones and endless streams of content, presenters have to fight harder than ever to grab and keep their audience's interest. No other presentation platform gives you as much command over attention spans as Prezi Next. The combination of visual storytelling and meaningful movement keeps your listeners engaged as you guide them through your message. To learn more, visit Prezi.com.
You've been listening to The Narrative, a podcast about building business stories. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.